turn to Philippians chapter 2, please? And I sometimes think after manifestations, I could just about go home.
Yes.
You know? It's such just like, Philippians chapter 2. Who'd like to read verse 13 there? Have any volunteers? Okay, Terry.
For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure.
Yeah. God works in you. You know, I was thinking about this verse. You'll never read anything like this verse any time before the day of Pentecost. You read where God worked with people. You won't read where God worked in them. He'd work with them. And this is, it's not really because we're better than they were. It's just because of what Jesus Christ accomplished that we have a relationship with God, which just wasn't available before Jesus Christ accomplished what he accomplished. But, you know, the fact that God could work in us to will and to do of his good pleasure, it's really something remarkable. If you turn to Ephesians chapter 6, I want to look at just a few verses. You know, and what I'd kind of like to look at this morning real quick is one facet of how God works in us. More like, you know, kind of like his heart toward us or his attitude toward us as he's working in us. And if you look at Ephesians 6, well, before we read this verse, do we have a family relationship with God?
Yes.
What is God to us? He's our Father. Now, if we keep that in mind, who would like to read verse 4 here in chapter 6? Okay, Wesley.
And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Okay. Now, is God going to tell fathers to do something which God, as a father, is not going to do? It makes it kind of tough to be an imitator of God if he's going to tell you to do something he's not doing, right? You know, Ephesians 5:1 says, be imitators of God, so he can't tell us, imitate me, but you do this while I do that, right? So then, if he says, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up. And those words, bring them up, are actually the word nurture. Nurture them in the disciplined instruction and admonition of the Lord. So if God's going to tell fathers, you know, don't provoke them to wrath, but nurture them, then how is God, when God works in us, what's his attitude of heart going to be toward us? He's going to provoke us to wrath? It's going to be a nurturing sort of a thing. You know, like I was thinking, you wouldn't ask Holden to change the oil in your truck, right? You know, he's not ready for that yet. Given time, maybe he will. But, you know, you think about what's the capability of that individual. You know, you're not going to ask little Johnny when he's 4, you know, go mow the yard and clean the pool. Maybe later, but you nurture that child. Over time, maybe he'll get there. And if God's asking fathers to do it, then God, as a father, when he works in us, he's not going to demand of us something. Do this, you know. Look at 1 Thessalonians 2, please. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Bless you.
Thank you.
This means you're alive, right?
Yeah.
That kid sneezed, what was it, 6 times?
7.
7? Okay. One for good measure. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Who would like to read verse 11? Okay, see you in the back.
As you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children.
Right. I thought of this morning with manifestations. You know, does God exhort and comfort us? Every time he set 2 of 9 manifestations, 2 of them, 2 of the 9 are just for the purpose of building us up by way of exhorting us and comforting us. 2 out of 9. Looks like it might be a little bit important to God, you know, to exhort and comfort us. And does it build you up or does it make you feel lousy? Yeah, it builds you up, you know, like a father does his children. And I think of this in light of, you know, it's God who works in you. You know, how does he work in you? Like, what's his attitude of heart toward us while he's working in us? He's exhorting, he's comforting. And the word charge is like testify. He's testifying to us, remember this, remember that, and it's encouraging, it's comforting. And as God works in us, then that's like an attitude of heart toward us that he has. You know, he's not bringing us, you know, provoking us to wrath. He's nurturing us, you know, helping us to grow. And if you look at Malachi chapter 3, please, just keeping these things in mind, Malachi chapter 3, you know, even though you'd never read Philippians 2:13 before Jesus Christ accomplished what he accomplished, it's not because we're better than they were, and it's not because God changed the way he feels toward people. It's because legal requirements were fulfilled, and so now God was able to extend a relationship which God previously was unable to legally extend to mankind. But, well, before we get there, who would like to read verse 6 in Malachi 3? Perry?
Verse 6. For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob, are you not consumed?
Are not consumed. Right. So, even though our relationship with God is much greater than what was available previously, is it because God's attitude toward people changed? No. I'm the Lord, I change not. God's still the same. He's the same. If he doesn't change, was he the same way in Genesis 1:1? If he doesn't change, he must have been. Is he the same way today as he was in Genesis 1:1? Must be. It says he doesn't change. So if God, the relationship is different, but God himself is the same. And if you turn to Jonah chapter 1, please, thinking about God working in us to will and do his good pleasure. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah. What page is that? Page 958. If you got a Gideon song. Other than that, can't help you. But thinking of God working in us, you know, exhorting and comforting and testifying to us as a father does his son, how he nurtures us. One facet of that, like how his heart toward us while he's working in us, there's that Psalm 103, which, you know, he says, you understand my thought afar off. A lot of stuff in that psalm helps to understand like how God's, his relationship with us while he's working in us. Now, God did not work in Jonah because it just wasn't available yet. But to see how God worked with Jonah can help us to perceive a way that he works in us, just like his attitude toward us while he's doing it. I wanted to look at this because some of this stuff I think is fantastic. Just because God doesn't change, and it helps us to see how God's heart is toward us. In chapter 1, verse 1, it says, now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying. Now before we go any further, if this happened today, this would be God working in us because we have God's Spirit in us. Jonah has God's Spirit. It was upon a condition. But if this verse was written today, this would be God working in us. It's the same principle, but a different relationship. That's all. Okay? So, the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, or Amittai, however you say that, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh, that great city. Oh, he didn't do it. So the first word is but, right?
Yeah.
But Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord and went down to Joppa. And he found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare thereof, went down into it to go with them unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And that's the end of the book of Jonah, right?
No,
it isn't. And the fact that that's not the end of the book of Jonah already gets your attention. That, wow, God said do this, you know, go this way, but Jonah went that way. Was it because Jonah did not know that was God telling him? He knew. And it wasn't like it was something that was written in God's word. This was specifically to you, Jonah, and he knew that. And he said, by his actions, you can forget it. And he got on a ship and he went that way. Now, we're going to skip some verses over here. God made a storm while he's on the ship. And let's see. Well, verse Let's just go down to verse, 11. They, the mariners, said to him, to Jonah, "What shall we do unto you that the sea may be calm unto us?" For the sea wrought and was tempestuous. And Jonah said unto them, "Take me up and throw me into the sea. So shall the sea be calm unto you, for I know that for my sake this great tempest is upon you." How could Jonah have known that? Must have had a little spiritual insight there. So is he still receiving information from God? Yep. Apparently, he said, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. How could you know the storm is going to stop if you throw me in a drink? You know? How committed was Jonah to not doing what God told him to do? He said, "I will die before I will follow that instruction that you gave to me." And in verse 15, "So they took up Jonah, and they threw him in the sea, and the sea stopped raging." And look at verse, we're at 16 also. "Then the men reverenced the Lord exceedingly, and offered a sacrifice unto the Lord, and made vows." It made quite an impression on those men. Verse 17, "Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." If you compare this with Matthew 12:40, you find, Jesus said, "As Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in hard earth." He wasn't, is it Pinocchio? That movie where that guy's in the whale of the belly, or the belly of the whale, either one, with a candle, and he's writing a book or something like that. That wasn't Jonah. Jesus wasn't in the grave writing a book. He was dead, and Jonah was dead. So, it happened. That's how committed Jonah was to not doing what he knew God had told him to do. And this guy was a prophet. It's amazing. Well, we're going to skip chapter 2. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. It says, he was in the fish swallowed him up, and then the fish vomited him out in verse 10 of chapter 2 on the dry land. Chapter 3, verse 1, "And the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the second time, saying..." Now again, if this was written today, this would fit within that Philippians 2:13 category, God working within him. It wasn't God working him only because the relationship hadn't been established yet, but the principle is the same. God's still working with Jonah, and we saw in Thessalonians, exhorted, comforted, charged everyone, testified as a father does his children, how, nurture your children in Ephesians 6:4. So after Jonah was committed to the death to not do what he knew God had specifically told him, "You do this," he said, "Forget it," and he literally died so that he would not do what God told him to do. After this has already happened, now he's alive, he had to be alive, because otherwise it says the word of the Lord came unto him. God's not going to talk to a corpse. So the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the second time, saying, "Get up, arise, go unto Nineveh, that great city, and preach unto it the preaching that I bid thee." Now if you compare that chapter 3 verse 2 with chapter 1 verse 2, it's basically exactly the same thing. He's telling him exactly the same thing that he told him to begin with. Jonah has already demonstrated his willingness to not do what God told him to do. Jonah has already demonstrated, "I ain't afraid to die. Not only am I not afraid, I'm going to choose to. You guys throw me overboard." Jonah has already demonstrated, he's going to be a fun guy to meet. this guy was a tough nut. I remember Dr. Werewolf in the Foundational Power for Abundant Living class. He said, "A prophet of God is always a tough man to take." you ain't going to crack this nut. A prophet must above all else believe God. And Jonah's not, he's working on that category there, but Jonah is a tough nut to crack, boy. You ain't going to tell Jonah, "You better do this." "Oh yeah, I'm going to die." Now what are you going to do? You're not pushing Jonah around. And yet, look what God did. He's still telling him the same thing he told him before. Now this is good for us. I was so blessed by your prayer. I feel that way a lot. You step in poo so much of the time, you feel like, maybe. Speak for myself. And yet, look how God didn't dismiss Jonah. At the end of chapter 1, verse 3, he didn't dismiss him. He's still working with him. You know, Jonah, how would Jonah know? Even when he's telling the guys, throw me over and the ocean will stop raging. How would Jonah have known that? God is not saying, well, nuts to you, and that's the end of Jonah after verse 3 of chapter 1. He's still working with him. And it's great for us because God hasn't changed. He's the same God that worked with Jonah. He's the same God. And so here we are in chapter 3. He just told him in verse 2 the same thing he told him before. But in verse 3, it says, so Jonah arose and went unto Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. This time he did it. Was it because Jonah was not afraid to die that he changed what he did? No. I don't really know why he changed. It could be that a realization grew in his, you know, perception that this is something that for whatever reason is very important to God. I don't know. That could be part of what was involved. But he had already shown, you know, for God to tell him the second time what he already told him the first time. I died the first time, I can die again. You know, I mean, that could have been his response, but this time it was different. And that's part of that nurturing. See, if God did what he did with Jonah, so now when God tells him now the same thing he told him then, now Jonah's is grown up a little bit more. He saw, all right, so he did it. And just how God worked with him. So he goes on, he does what God told him to do. We're going to skip most of it. Look at verse 10, the last verse of chapter 3. And God saw their works after Jonah had preached to them, that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he had said that he would do unto them, and he didn't do it. There's a lot of understanding. There's a chapter in this book, what's it called? Something about Jonah, a study of the book of Jonah. It's chapter 3, and it's Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. A lot of terrific insight in the book of Jonah in this little study here, which explains a lot of stuff that we're not going to have time to get into this morning. This guy Jonah, he was him going to Tarshish instead of going to Nineveh was really almost like a carbon copy of Paul going to Jerusalem when Paul knew, don't go. It's just about a carbon copy of that. And how God worked with Jonah, you know, even though he was so dedicated to do what, or to not do what God told him to do. So they repented. So now we get to chapter 4. Enter Jonah again. And Jonah was so blessed because he had done what God wanted him to do. But Jonah was slightly upset. It said it displeased Jonah exceedingly. You know, he was blind with rage. I don't know what you'd call it. It displeased Jonah exceedingly. And he was very angry. And that's the end of the book of Jonah. No. God kept working. Verse 2. And he prayed unto the Lord and said, I pray you, O Lord. Isn't this what I told you when I was still in my country? That's why I fled before into Tarshish. And here's why he's angry with God. For I knew that you're a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and repentest thee of the evil. Well, now we can understand why he was so angry, right? You know, that's why he was so angry. He was really angry because Assyria, you know, Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria, they repented. Jonah knew that Israel was so messed up right now that if Assyria got their stuff together, they were going to wallop the daylights out of Israel because Israel was not coming back to God. That's why he wanted to just not deliver the message. He felt like if the Assyrians don't repent, then they can't come and walk the daylights out of Israel because Israel is telling God to take a hike. That was part of his heart behind that thing. And that's why Jonah is so ticked off. He said, you know, I knew this could happen. Didn't I tell you that this could have happened? Now look at it. You know, that's what it, verse 3, therefore now, O Lord, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it's better for me to die than to live. Were those just words? No. He had proven by his actions he wasn't whistling Dixie when he said this. He meant every word of it. I'd rather be dead than to see this. Now, this is the guy. He's done what God asked him to do. And think of this with Philippians 3:13. God works in us. You know, if we step in a pile of poop, God, he didn't bail out on Jonah. He kept working with it. If God instructs us to do something, and we step in a pile of poo, God says, go this way, nuts to that, I'm doing the... God, if he did this with Jonah, God hasn't changed. He's going to keep nurturing us. And look how he works with Jonah. Verse 4, then said the Lord, hey, Jonah, you're doing well to be angry. And it's an interesting response. The Lord said, doest thou well to be angry? So Jonah went out of the city. Doesn't even say that Jonah answered him. You know, be like, say, hey, Rube, what do you think about this? And Rube just walks away. It's a pretty cold reception. I mean, Jonah, he was deeply hurt. He was very upset. And when God asked him a question, he didn't even answer him. He just walked away. That speaks for itself. Verse 5, so Jonah went out of the city, sat on the east side of the city, and there made him a booth and sat under it in the shadow till he might see what would become of the city. And the Lord God, verse 6, prepared a gourd. Now this is going to be God working with Jonah. It's just, he prepared a gourd, made it come up over Jonah that it might be a shadow over his head to deliver him from his grief. So Jonah was exceeding glad of the gourd. He was exceedingly displeased in verse 1, that, you know, but now he's exceedingly glad for this gourd. Verse 7, but God prepared a worm when the morning rose the next day, and the worm smote the gourd, that the gourd withered. And verse 8, it came to pass when the sun got up that God prepared a vehement east wind. And the sun beat upon the head of Jonah that he fainted and wished in himself to die. This seems to be a theme with this guy. And said, it's better for me to die than to live. It seems to be on his mind a little bit. And verse 9. Now who had prepared the gourd? God did. Who got the worm ready? God did. Who brought the east wind? God did. Why is he doing this? Verse 9. And God said to Jonah, hey, is it good for you to be upset for the gourd? Well, this time Jonah doesn't just walk away from it. He said, well, yeah, I do well to be angry, even unto, okay, we get it, Jonah, even unto death. Then said the Lord, verse 10, you had pity on the gourd for the which you didn't labor, neither made it grow. Came up in a night, it perished in a night. He really had an attachment to that gourd. Thankfulness for the gourd. Verse 11, shall I spare Nineveh, that great city, wherein are more than 60,000 persons that can't tell between their right hand and their left hand, and also a lot of livestock? You know, and it's the end of the book of Jonah. But I thought it was great how, you know, even though Jonah, he responded the way that he responded, you know, how as a father exhorts and comforts and testifies to his children, how, you know, he's nurturing Jonah. He's helping Jonah to grow up. Jonah was hurt. He was angry. He had already, you know, almost in a sense committed suicide. And dying is a real theme in Jonah's mind at this point. And how God is still working with him. And even at the very end of the book of Jonah, he's helping Jonah to get the bigger picture, so to speak. Jonah just didn't get it. His heart was pure. His heart was right. It might sound funny, his heart was pure and he deliberately disobeyed God. But if you read that book, there's a lot more to this thing than what you might see on the surface. And thinking how God works with us, you know, we're going to screw up. We do. But when Jonah did, but God didn't say, okay, I'm done with you. He nurtures us. He'll still work with us. Even at the very end, Jonah's still talking about dying. Well, maybe later on God worked with him on that. I don't know. But how he worked with him. And it's God hasn't changed. Our relationship with God is different. But God is still the same. This is our God. He's the same God. And he'll work with us the same way. You know, we step in poo. He's not going to say nuts to you. There's lots and lots of records in the scriptures where we could read where people, they were just people, just like we are. They made mistakes. You know, I was blessed the other week. Somebody read that thing after Paul had gone to Jerusalem. Then he's on the ship, and the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul. That was after he already did what God told him not to do. He said, be of good cheer. That's okay. Now we're going to do this. That's how God works with us. And such, you know, like what it can do to our heart to realize that's the kind of God that he is. He's a father, but what a tender father. He nurtures us. He exhorts us. He comforts us. He works with us. He works in us. And, you know, it takes a lot of the hesitancy or the fear or the, you know, where you can just open up to a guy like that. Or, you know, look what this guy did and how he worked with him. You can work with a guy like that, right? That's our Father. And I just thought it was great seeing some of that stuff with Philippians 2:13. God working in us, man, he's not going to give up on us. If we step on poor, he just keeps working, he keeps nurturing us. And what a blessing it is to have a father like that.